Future Proof with Jonathan McCrae on News Talk.
Proudly supported by Research Ireland.
Welcome back to Future Proof on News Talk. I'm Jonathan McCrae. Now, if like me, you have been wondering, how is it possible? I mean, how is it possible for all of this rain to just keep coming? Like, coming and coming and coming, no end to this bloody rain. How is that possible? Well, the surprising thing is that actually a lot of us don't really know. We don't know where all the water has come from. And there's a lot of hydrogen lying around that might help answer this question. We're joined now by Professor John Wade. He is Associate Professor of Planetary Materials at the Department of Earth Sciences at the University of Oxford. Welcome, fellow Jonathan. How are you?
Hello, not bad. Thank you very much. And it is incredibly wet.
Oh, Jack. I mean, my son, so I know you need to tell me about the water cycle because I have two children and it seems like the children learn nothing at all except for the water cycle. Every diagram they bring back home is the water cycle. And I wonder, am I in some sort of inception dream? Because everything just seems to be rain at the moment.
It is rain. And it's really interesting. So the story of water on Earth, where does it come from? It's probably one of the outstanding planetary science, earth science-y questions we have. You know, so where...
How is that a question we haven't answered yet? Where the water comes from?
This is a good question, right? So one of the things is, does the hydrogen, which makes up water, is it accreted when the planet's first formed? So in other words, is it sort of trapped as the planet's growing from dust and rocks and growing and getting hot and separating into a core and the rocky bit we stand on? Is it trapped in that process? And then basically water out hydrogen, out gases when the planet cools and we end up with water on the surface of the Earth? Or is it added to the surface of the Earth after the Earth is made by comets and other materials that might land? And it has huge implications for planetary habitability, the questions of why we're here, and also, you know, the evolution of the planet as a whole. I mean, we need water. I mean, we might not need this much of it. I'm looking out the window. We might not need this much of it, but we do need water. All life needs water. It's kind of like the universe's universal solvent. You know, it's good for moving things around. So where it comes from and how it gets on the surface of the Earth. And actually, the other thing that's kind of really interesting is why it stays on the surface of the Earth for 4.6 billion years. You know, it's gone on Mars. It's disappeared on Mars. Mm. There's no water left on the surface of the Mars. Very little water left on the surface of Mars. But on Earth, it's hung around on the surface of the Earth for 4.6 billion years. And, you know, and it comes back to that question, you know, why is it still raining today? Why is it not either been, you know, weathered into the rocks and lost from the surface or gone up to space or whatever? But the constancy of water is really interesting.
May I present to you the diagram of my children's homework, which is the water cycle?
Yes.
No. So the first question I have, and we'll talk about why it hasn't gone away in a second. But is the surface of the Earth, the mantle and the layers below it, is that sort of porous? Like, is it possible that more hydrogen is sort of fizzing out of the Earth's inner bit, and that actually it is possible for it to rain every single day of the year in Ireland soon?
And here in the UK. I mean, it's not porous in the sense of it's full of holes, but that hydrogen can sit in parts of in crystal lattices, in the holes in the rocks, in the minerals of the rocks. It can sit within there, and when they melt and they're processed through the surface, that hydrogen can come out and potentially generate water with oxygen. But you've also got to think that the Earth is quite...
And have we measured, are we getting... Because obviously with the water cycle, right, water means more either bodies of water, which it's obviously, as we know, is problem. Or it means more rain.
No, so it means oceans and seas. So rain would be your climate, but in terms of the amount of water on the surface of the Earth, we're thinking about the volumetric, the amount of water in the seas and the oceans. The atmosphere probably doesn't add a huge amount more water to it, but it is part of that water cycle.
Oh, does it not? So it doesn't matter how much water we'd have, we wouldn't get more water in the atmosphere. I would have thought more water on the surface, more water in the atmosphere.
Well, it's not so much that. You just think the amount of the water in the sea and the oceans is way more than the water in the atmosphere. The atmosphere is not that thick, is it? It's, 10 kilometres thick. And it's just the amount, there's way more in the seas. But what's kind of interesting is, certainly through a large part of the recent geologic history, people think that there's actually a similar amount of water for the last couple of billion years that have sat around on the surface of the Earth. And that's kind of interesting. If you think about plate tectonics and slabs of the Earth be descending into the deep mantle, that could take water with it. And I just think it's kind of an interesting question.
So we do feel that the amount of water on the surface of the Earth has remained constant pretty much all of that time.
For the last, throughout the Phanerozoic. So for the last sort of, you know, few geological periods, it's remained, as far as we know, reasonably constant. And the salinity of the seas, you know, the amount of salt in the seas appears to remain reasonably constant through time. So it's telling you something kind of important about the amount of water that we may have lost to the solid Earth. I think, if I remember correctly, the maximum amount is probably around seven oceans worth over 4 billion years have been lost to the solid Earth. So, you know, it's not a lot in terms of...
How does water get lost to the solid Earth?
Well, it gets trapped in rocks. It weathers. You know, you think about sort of clay minerals. They're sort of... They're igneous rocks that have been weathered. They react with water. They take up some of that water. And then they get buried and they get subducted. And that would be a good transport mechanism to the lower Earth. And actually, if that water gets to the core mantle boundary, one could argue that actually the water gets, the hydrogen in the water gets incorporated into the core and you lose water in perpetuity from the surface of the Earth.
Well, to hijack a meme from Irish culture, seven oceans, that seems like a lot of water.
It seems like a lot, but not when you think about the size of the Earth. There's not that much water. I mean, I don't know if you can probably look on Wikipedia and there's pictures of the Earth and like water drops on the surface, you know, the amount of water in the sea and the amount of water in fresh water. It's not a lot volumetrically.
But isn't it all of the water in all of the oceans? If it's seven oceans.
It seems like a lot, yeah, but we're on the surface. But you've got to think, you know, the Earth is pretty big. Luckily.
Is it possible that we are releasing water at the same rate as we're also taking water in?
Yeah, sucking in, it is. But you know, when things are very, very sensitively balanced, that's kind of interesting. Why would it be so sensitively balanced? Why is exactly the same amount of water going in as coming out? Again, that's a really interesting question. And it's probably the rate of ingassing, water being dragged in, and the rate of outgassing, water coming out, has probably changed, or almost definitely has changed over geologic time. And are we just living in a special moment? So all these are really big questions for things like habitability and why we're here. You know, and asking the first order question, is the Earth kind of a special planet? You know, because we obviously are special because we're here.
Yeah.
But, you know, these are not necessarily particularly well understood questions, or, you know, there's not really good answers.
You're leaving a gap open there for intelligent design.
I'm not going to go there.
No, let's not go there. But at the same time, you know, we talk about Goldilocks. You know, this is a Goldilocks planet. We'll go off and try and find Earth-like planets, and they're close. But I think we read a headline of a couple of weeks ago, and it was like, Goldilocks-type Earth-like planet, not so far away. And of course, it was like 30 light years away or something. And it said, it is minus 70 degrees on the surface. And I thought, well, I mean, it's not that Earth-like, is it? So, we are very, 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 very lucky that we have this sort of snow globe of an atmosphere where presumably the atmosphere at the top is what's keeping the hydrogen from disappearing and us losing all of that gas and water and that stuff that we see in Mars, for example.
Yeah, so the one thing is we have a magnetic field, you know, that protects us from some of that solar radiation. That really is protecting that sort of upper atmosphere.
But how does that affect water?
Well, because it doesn't get... There's two things. You've got a cold patch in the tropopause at the top of the atmosphere, which is very cold and not much water gets above it. And you've also got this magnetic field, which protects us from, you know, solar rays and whatnot, which helps to stop the splitting of water in the upper atmosphere and the loss of hydrogen to space. That happens on Mars. I mean, and it happens on Earth as well, but it's not significant. There's all sorts of interesting questions. I mean, one of the big questions, I think, and I'm really interested from a science perspective, is the modern day atmosphere is very different to the ancient atmosphere 3 billion years ago, and how that's affected life and how that's affected the chemistry of things like the seas and how we live with the consequences today is really, really interesting. So, you know, a good example of that is, you know, the seas. Life first formed in ancient seas probably 4 billion years ago. But those ancient seas were very different. They were bright green. They contained huge amounts of iron. The atmosphere didn't have oxygen in it. It was probably orange. It would have looked very different. And then there's what we call the Great Oxidation Event 2 billion years ago, and the sea chemistry changes dramatically. All the iron drops out, and it forms iron deposits. And we live with the consequences today. One of the really interesting things, and I work a lot with medics, is the fact that many diseases are reflecting the changes in the sea chemistry 2 billion years ago. So a lot of diseases are actually about the acquisition of iron. And that reflects the fact that all the iron disappears from the sea 2 billion years ago when there's a bit of oxygen in the atmosphere. And those sorts of things are really interesting. So the story of water and the story of things that we actually care about today, not just the rain, but diseases, they're all linked together. We are the product of 4 billion years worth of evolution. And we live with the consequences.
Yeah, it's amazing. Thinking about the water and the hydrogen that is below the surface of the planet, is there water below the mantle? Surely not.
No, not free water in that sense, but it is locked up in minerals. There are hydrous minerals, or what we call nominally anhydrous minerals, minerals with a bit of hydrogen and oxygen in, that locks up. But again, the amount of water locked up in the mantle is not particularly well constrained. And this is where some of these very high-pressure experiments trying to look at the fate of water during planetary accretion really come from. Did some of it end up in the core? Does that limit the amount you end up within the mantle? And then what does that mean for where the origin of surface water come from? Was it cometary, which is some people have proposed? Is it compositionally, isotopically slightly different to the water that's coming out of the deep mantle? Again, that's something people have questioned and tried to analyse. Hydrogen's a difficult thing to measure at very small quantities. It's not the nicest of elements to measure.
What about the effect of this trapped hydrogen and trapped water? I mean, when we try to keep fusion reactors from overheating, we use cooling water. I'm wondering, does that have the same effect on the heat that's coming from the core of our planet? Is the water keeping this this planet we walk on habitable and not too hot?
No, not in that sense, because there's probably not a lot. Again, volumetrically, the Earth's big. It's probably not doing a lot, but it might change. What it might change is if you had some hydrogen in the core, it might change things like the evolution of the Earth's magnetic dynamo, you know, the bit that keeps the magnetic field present. So there's lots of work, and that's something, again, how the magnetic field on the Earth works is very, very, it's not particularly well understood.
Yeah. Okay.
Stable over time. So it has consequences for things like that. That little bit of hydrogen in the core, for instance, might change the way we think about magnetic field generation.
Okay. One last question, and it's to do with this theory about comets having brought all the water. I mean, surely that's something we could model to see whether or not it was feasible. I mean, what's your take on it? What does our modeling say? Is it possible that over that length of time we could have had that many comets bring that much water?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a bit of a fan of the cometary delivery.
It's cooler, isn't it? Rather than it was there anyway.
It's 3 hours of sort of burping out the Earth. However, one of the things is that, you know, hydrogen or water is made up of two stable isotopes, you know, deuterium and hydrogen. And actually, one of the things we look at on the surface of the Earth and what the gases that come out of the Earth is the deuterium-hydrogen ratio in the water. And the key thing then is matching up where that water from comets, there's the cometary material match the deuterium hydrogen ratio we see on the Earth.
Yeah.
And the problem at the
it's
moment,
like a fingerprint you're looking for, where this mix of water, if in the right amounts, would signify it came from a comet. And we're not seeing that.
The problem is the comets we measure today, it's 4.6 billion years after we've made the planets. And they're coming from different parts of the solar system, where they're formed in different regions. So one of the questions you might have is, you measure a comet today, but that doesn't mean to say the comet that landed on Earth 4.6 billion years ago had the same cometary fingerprint. It might have come from a different area. So it's that sort of forensic approach of trying to work out, well, you know, do we have samples of the sorts of materials the planets were built from, or have they all been accreted to the Earth and we're standing on what we have is what we've got kind of thing?
So I started this interview asking if listeners ever wondered where all the water comes from. And I think the answer is not only we don't know, but also it's complicated. And finally, we're very unlikely to ever know for sure.
Oh, I don't know about never know for sure. I think we're knocking little edges off, corners off these problems. And I think with new space missions and new observations and new experiments, we're slowly sort of, how do I put it? We're slowly moving towards a consensus of opinion. I think that's kind of what science does.
Scientists calls for more research. Brilliant. Professor Jonathan Wade, Associate Professor of Planetary Materials at University of Oxford. Thanks for your time.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Future Proof with Jonathan McCrae.
Proudly supported by Research Ireland.
Sunday from midday. News Talk. Conversation that counts.